Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here is your host of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of The Millennial Dentist. We are super pumped. It is Master Sunday, and we are in Nashville, back at it, back in the grind. And Payman, we have a super special guest tonight that I'm really excited to hear from. You've met him. You know him. Why don't you introduce him?
Absolutely. Dr. Michael Scherer from Sonoma, California.
Is that like the same Sonoma, like wine country?
Technically, it's Sonora. We get Sonora. That
Sonora. See, Sonoma. Payman's already messing it up.
No, it is Sonora, California. So the way I met him, let me go around a little background. I met him last year. I was selected. Very, very fortunate to go to this meeting in San Diego as part of Zest Advisory Clinical Group that they had done FTX. And I was fortunate to work with them, with Tony, and I got invited to go to this meeting. And I met Michael first time there as well. I had already heard and listened to him and watched his videos on YouTube, but I met him the first time there, and from then on, he's just really my mentor. I look up to him, and I'm very fortunate to talk to him today. I have a lot of questions, a lot of things I want to go over.
You wrote an outline. You're ready, Doc. Why don't you just kind of tell us a little about yourself and our listeners, and kind of let's go from there.
Well, right now I'm a clinical prosthodontist in Sonora, California, full-time, four and a half days in the saddle, but I'm also kind of a part-time in the academic world. I come from kind of a background in Florida. I'm an East Coast boy myself, grew up down in the Florida Keys. That's kind of home for me, and just nothing but fishing and diving and hanging out and goofing around, and I went to dental school at Nova. And it's still a relatively new dental school at the time when I went there. And I met my other half in the gross anatomy lab. So I was a second year student. She was a first year student. And, you know, I'll let your podcast listeners interpret that in a little bit more depth. But nonetheless, you know, it's kind of been her and I ever since. And she was a year below me. I graduated and practiced as a general dentist for about two and a half years or so, both in Florida and Ohio, at a variety of practices, at a community health center, at a high cosmetic practice down in the Keys with Dr. Fred Troxel. And then I went up to Ohio where I enrolled in prosthodontics, and it's just kind of been, you know, a love of full arch dentistry ever since. And, you know, that was at Ohio. I completed a prost residency at Ohio, and it really opened my eyes. I had a lot of fun there. And, you know, as a dentist, I've always known that I've done really great with tooth dentistry and individual teeth. And I just said, you know what, I kind of would want to go back to school and learn a little bit more at the scientific level. And certainly everybody that's listening can get extremely skilled and talented in private practice and taking CE and everything like that. And I just kind of wanted a jumpstart on that. And I'm kind of a science nerd, you know, I've always been drawn to science, always been publishing. And, you know, when that opportunity finished, my wife got into orthodontic school at Loma Linda, and it brought us out to the West Coast, where I said, well, shoot, I got to go do something for the next few years while she's in school. And the opportunity came up to teach at UNLV in Las Vegas. And it was a neat experience because I basically became, from the get-go, the director of prosthodontics and implant dentistry at the school. And
how old were you at that point?
I was 30 or so?
Wow. At the time. So you practiced for 2.5 years general dentistry, right?
Yes.
And then at that point is when you thought of going back to pros. Now tell me why pros.
You know, it's one of those things. I've always loved dentures. I've always loved full arch reconstruction. And I just kind of wanted the scientific love of it. You know, it had nothing to do with the techniques and everything, but I wanted to to get into the depth and the detail of the science. Because it's hard when you're in practice, when you're so focused on treating patients, managing overhead, managing staff, to do any science projects or to do any research. And when I was in school in Ohio, I published 3 papers all on clinical techniques and you know, laboratory assessments of overdentures and, you know, full restorations. And, you know, then during my time at UNLV, I probably published another 10 papers just on a variety of different applications. And science has always been kind of one of the most interesting things. And it started when I was in college. I did environmental science studies in the Everglades and a variety of different things. So I've always been kind of a science nerd.
Cool. Well, that makes sense too, because like you said, you can get a lot of like workflow and I think foundational things in CE, but ultimately you're not going to get the science background in a weekend course or even a week course. That makes sense.
Well, you know, there's a lot of opportunity. I mean, even in clinical practice, I know a lot of my colleagues that publish tremendously in clinical practice. So, you know, it's not necessarily for everyone to go back in school, and I know it was extremely difficult after a couple of years of practice to say, well, shoot, am I really going to go do this? And I did. It's been a really fun journey, and prosthodontics has been kind of a nerd specialty for me. And my first love is always general dentistry, and I still practice a lot of general dentistry in my practice. And I still single tooth fills and single crowns. And I tell you, for the guys and the gals out there that limit their practice to prosthodontics, bless them. It's a extremely challenging thing to do.
Most prosthodontists aren't placing implants and whatnot, right? I mean, that's kind of a unique thing.
It is. You know, we were able to get that surgical experience, and I've always known that I wanted to do surgery. And surgical prosthodontics is really one of the most enjoyable aspects of prosthodontics. And now I don't do all of my own surgery. I probably only do about 30% of the implant surgery in my practice. But I do 100% of my implant overdentures, which is really always my first love. When I was in dental school, I treated my first overdenture patient. It was the lady that was a family friend for 30 years, and she came to me with a broken down mouth, failing partials, and she never would approach me because it was embarrassing for her. And I had the opportunity as a dental student to transform her by giving her dentures and even just the 2 implant overdenture with locators. And, you know, here we are now 15 years later, and I still follow up on her, and it's still the original 2 implants, the original 2 locators, and the original 2 inserts on the denture. It's unusual.
That's amazing. I mean, that's one of the things you just kind of mentioned it. You do overdentures. You have 5 YouTube channels. How do you manage 5 YouTube channels? You have
and a practice.
You teach.
And teach.
I mean, what kind of coffee do you take in the morning that you're that's balancing fun. And do? Like, I mean, this is crazy.
You know, I have an extremely patient and loving wife.
You have to, because my wife's already getting tired of the podcast. She's like, no more recording on these nights.
I mean, great, great touch. Tell me a little bit, how's your dynamic? Now, your wife also practices.
I absolutely love being married to another dentist. You know, we're a bunch of just complete freaks. You know, you kind of have to be as a dentist. We're all a little bit strange. We're all a little bit weird. And, you know, she's totally used to, you know, us hanging out at the office until 10, 11 o'clock at night, just doing stupid stuff. And she's even got names for all my equipment just because, you know, she has all of her girlfriends that'll say, aren't you worried about Mike, you know, working so late in the office and having, is he at the bar meeting girls or something? And she starts laughing and she says, oh, he's got 3D printers. He's got intraoral scanners. He doesn't have time for girlfriends.
Man, that's true. She's such a sweet, sweet orthodontist. And I had a pleasure of meeting her also. Now, you guys both came to Hinman. I saw pictures of you guys in Hinman. But let's get back to the dynamic. Like, do you think of having her in your practice, does it change the way you look at dentistry? Because she's an orthodontist, you're a pros. Because I see these digital dentistry, the way that you come out and publish and develop things on your videos, there's a lot of correlations with ortho. A lot of the stuff you do. Now, tell us a little bit about that and that whole dynamic of having different specialty working in the same practice.
Well, part of the dynamic too is finding somebody that complements you. And she is not a computer person. Like she still looks at me and I say, okay, Melissa, would you click on the folder? She's like, wait, is it a left click or a right click? And I'm not a business person. Like she grew up in a business family. I grew up in a clinical family. Everybody in my family are doctors. So, you know, she complements me because she just knows the business stuff like that. And I know the technology like that. So, you know, we work like a team really nicely. And whether it's the pros or the ortho, you know, she doesn't necessarily do a lot of my pros cases just because I laugh and I look at her and I say, well, there's not a lot of moving of teeth, you know, with full arch reconstruction. I just take them out. Or, you know, I can look at the teeth and just say, well, why would I want to do that? I can just veneer them or crown them and be done with them in 2 visits as opposed to 2 years. However, there, of course, is a time and a place for very nice orthodontic treatment for ideal dentistry. And the reality is that, you know, even with all the digital crazy stuff that I do, she's still a pretty conventional orthodontist. She is just pretty easygoing, likes to do it sort of in a very particular way.
That's awesome. Is she starting to, does she use any of your printers and that sort of thing? Does she mess with any of that yet?
I always push her too, because I've been moving teeth also with 3D printers, with making my own aligners for about the past 2.5 years or so. And we have some fun with that. But what happens too is that, you know, with any sort of technology, especially with her, she says, you know what? In my practice, I just kind of need tried and true. It's sometimes really difficult to say, well, I'm going to push the envelope on this one versus, okay, I've got a busy practice. I need to somehow go ahead and build all of this in so that way I can still ultimately pay the bills at the end of the month. And that's part of the thing because, you know, my staff lovingly calls me the most predictable, unpredictable dentist they've ever met in their life because I'm so predictable. I need my brushes in the very particular spot. I need my burrs to be exactly the same every time. But I walk into a patient over the day and we review the huddle in the morning. They're like, oh, what are you doing here? I'm like, I don't know. We'll figure it out.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, so you're part-time faculty then too still, right? Is that correct? So what one big question I wanted to talk about is how and maybe it's different there. It's Loma Linda, right?
At Loma Linda and UNLV in Las Vegas.
Okay, yeah. So I don't know how it is there, but where we were, I felt like at Tennessee that technology was not something that was very utilized, and it's still a very old school, traditional way of education. And so I wonder, as an you know, your thoughts as an educator on what the future looks like in trying to, as we evolve, to become better educators and therefore produce better dentists out of school. And whatnot. Touch on that a little bit.
Well, I love that topic because I'll start with my experience at UNLV because I was hired because they were just really, really desperate in need of somebody to lead the pros department there. And it started with just taking over that department and it turned into also helping coordinate their implant department. And I took a program that was probably placing 25 to 50 implants a year up to about 200 to 300 per year in the school. Awesome. And I
had that just is that all residents or is that no?
That's all pre-doc students.
That's awesome.
So wow. That's unbelievable.
There is no residency for anything other than ortho and pedo at UNLV. They have a GPR program, but it's separate. So they don't interact much with the pre-doc students. So when I was in there, I had one student placing over 20 implants. Another student in that same class placing approximately 12 implants. And I took a program where we actually took the entire group of dental students to the implant direct training facility. And they had a chance to interact with all of the comb beam software. When I was in dental school, I mean, this was kind of comb beams were out, but I was always taught, no, this is for the residents.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not touching this. This is not for you. You can't figure this stuff out. And at UNLV, my chairman gave me the ultimate authority to do what I thought was best for the students. And I understand, especially for the millennial generation that's listening to this podcast or those interested in the millennial generation, that the millennial generation gets it. Digital technology, all you have to do is point with your finger and the students will know how to do it. And I took an entire pre-doc curriculum and got them using Anatomage cone beam software. all of them would come to us with their 3D plan based upon a cone beam image. And this is what, 5-6 years ago when cone beam CT was
Still probably absolutely new. Yeah.
I know. And we got to the point where we were taking the students every year. We would take them to the implant direct training facility. We would teach them in a group session the Anatomage software, cone beam CT. We were going through the renderings, going through the understanding of that. And then on top of that, the students would plan their own cases and then bring that to me in my office. And these are students like our listeners that grew up with Mario, with video games, with 3D.
They had an iPhone in their hand when they were 16. Yeah.
Better believe it. And it's such a natural thing to just look at this generation. And the problem with dental schools is not the students, okay? This is what sometimes is not talked about in dental schools. The problem is the complacency. And many times it's the complacency of, well, you know what? You just need to put your nose into the books. You can't Don't mess with this other fluffy stuff. You need to get your requirements done and get out. That is such a farce. The students want more. And now always it falls into the rule of thirds, because there's always going to be the rule of thirds of the shiners, the whiners, and the recliners. Ultimately, you have to tap into – and that's not my quote. That was passed on to me by an 85-year-old professor.
That's a great quote though. Yeah, that's really good. Shiners, whiners, recliners. I like it. Yep. There's probably – you can probably put percentages on that too. Yeah. Okay, keep going. Sorry.
But nonetheless, all you have to do with our students in our generation, in the millennial generation, so – that way, all you have to do is say, give me the tools to be able to experiment. Give me the ability to expand my mind. I don't want to do just class 1-2 amalgams and single crowns. I want to use digital technology. I want to do this. And we as faculty have to allow that.
Well, and I think part of it has to be, you know, they're very fortunate to have you, but I think part of the reality is too, is that there's not a, because of the, I guess, the income, okay, versus what it's in private practice versus what it is in faculty, okay, that you have less and less innovative dentists going back into faculty because there's such a discrepancy in that. Or they're fighting against a, you know, political battle if they don't have the, what am I trying to say, like the all the directors of the school backing you like you have.
In other words, I feel like to compliment what his soul is saying is also there are very few people like you with the love of science and the passion you have for teaching, for what you're doing, because you're getting a pay cut going there. What he's doing,
he could
be teaching and those hours making 10 times more, yet he's going back to change a program for a school.
It's not always just a salary thing too, because sometimes when you say, well, I'm going to go ahead and artificially bump up the salary of all faculty, that ultimately it bumps up the cost of attendance for students. And we in this generation know that student loans are a significant burden. Not just like, well, this is annoying. No, this is life-changing numbers for a lot of our listeners and people that are tuning into this podcast. And I'm so respectful of that. And when I get to the point where I say, well, students are graduating with $400,000+ in student loan debt, that's a serious hindrance for being able to grow as a young dentist. And I can tell you that I have met so many faculty that are so progressive that want to be able to help students. And thankfully, at both institutions that I've been able to be a part at UNLV and Loma Linda, those barriers are significantly lower than maybe potentially some other places around this country. And what I've found, especially at UNLV, is that they eliminated the departmental model, meaning that there was only two departments, clinical sciences and biomedical sciences. So I had one person to answer to, my clinical sciences chair. There was no budget battles between endo and perio. They weren't fighting over a cone beam machine. The general dentistry students could refer out for a cone beam, could grab an intraoral scan, could sit down with a faculty and plan a case. That's magical.
How many schools are like that? Now, we're talking about UT, we're in the South now, but also how much do you know about other, because I like to talk about the whole nation. Like now we're here in the South in Memphis, we went to University of Tennessee. At the same time, how many programs are like the way you are and how many other programs are just like the way we, I mean, what do you see out there right now in the present?
You know, it's hard to comment on that just because I'm kind of outside now of the full-time academic world. I would not have enough interaction amongst the schools out there to be able to give you a firm number, but I would probably be venturing to guess it's probably less than 10% of the schools have that model.
Well, and I've seen too that from talking with students and getting emails and that sort of thing, it seems to be the ones that don't have residency programs like that tend to have a much better general dentistry, yeah, you know, pre-doc, whatever you want to call it, curriculum than those that do. Like where we were, we had every specialty that was there. So you can imagine that perio and prost and surgery were all getting, you know, implant. We were lucky to restore an implant while we were there.
Right.
Well, and part of the reason why I loved going to Nova too is that we could touch implants. As pre-doc students, I restored multiple implant cases, overdentures, anterior aesthetic cases. Yes, granted, I was being with my hand being held by my prost or perio residents or anything of that nature. But one thing I learned when I was at school at Nova was that, you know, if you had the desire, if you had the fire in the belly to do something beyond just the norm, beyond just whatever your basic requirements are, there was very few barriers that people would implement in front of you. And I took that with me to Ohio State, with me to UNLV, with me to Loma Linda. And all I have to do is have a student come to me and say, hey, doc, this is kind of what I'm thinking. I says, well, what's your justification for that? Do you have any literature to back that up? Because you've got to be an academician about this too. And if they would approach me with a reasonable plan, and I couldn't argue against that, let's do that. That sounds like a totally legitimate thing to do, even if it was the craziest thing in the entire world. Because part of what happens too is that as a faculty member, you got to know how to do the dentistry too. Because if you kind of say, no, you got to do it this way, but then you can't do that, that's a problem.
I mean, that's one of the problems, because as soon as I got out, now, you know, right now I have almost 950 hours of CE, but each one of those CE hours honestly taught me more than a semester going to clinic. Like sometimes listening to some of these people, but yet the people that are teaching and in our school, as well as a lot of the schools that I know, that their professors don't have many years of clinical experience. They do have a lot of science and research, but yet they don't have enough clinical experience. Where when I started practicing, a lot of the stuff I heard from my professors were not necessarily true when I went to these people that are actually famous speakers. Does that make sense? Like, it just, to me, I felt like that was a big deal.
One thing I wanted to talk about too, and or ask you questions about, is you mentioned the debt load, and as students graduate and whatnot, and they, you know, we all really want to be technological, right? We want to be paperless. We want to be digital x-rays. We want to have Combi. How do you suggest that new dentists start and try to do that with the debt load? It's hard. Sometimes I think we get this question a lot, like they're just trying to keep their head above water, yet they want to go invest in all this technology and whatnot. And then they may be fighting an older dentist who doesn't want to invest in technology. Talk about some of the dilemmas you see with students, or the things, the advice you give, and some of that stuff.
So the number one thing I believe in is stay lean, stay hungry. The last thing you want to do when you have $400,000 plus in student loan debt is to be convinced by a dental supplier or by a manager that you should be investing in hundreds of thousands of dollars of equipment that you may or may not need, especially in your first year. Always prove yourself. Prove that you can do this. Start someplace. If you don't feel comfortable with management, with running a practice, don't go buy a practice right away. The vast majority of clinicians and young students who are graduating these days are going to work for somebody. And rightly so. That's a great way of getting experience. I started out my first 2+ years of practice not owning a practice. I worked at a community health clinic and also mentored under somebody who was 30+ years of clinical experience ahead of me. And I tell you, I still use my clinical skills that I gained in my first year after graduating dental school. And there's nothing to be ashamed about of going to go to a what's called a point and pull clinic, meaning a community health center where all you do is you get in there and you take out teeth. Oh my gosh. And young students always come up to me when I'm teaching or when I'm in a CE course and lecturing, they'll message me an email and they say, how do I get started with dental implants? And I say, get really good at taking out teeth. get so good at taking out teeth that it looks like the tooth just elevated out of the socket. And you come back and you look at a full arch case and you go, you know what? I could be that He-Man that I learned back in my oral surgery rotation where they look at me and they go, bam, 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 and the buckle plates are all gone. But you're better than that. Make it look like you did not do surgery. Not only are your patients going to thank you for it, but number two is that if you can make a tooth elevate out of a socket, or if you know how to handle a suture, if you can handle a flap, if you can remove mandibular tori, you can do dental implants.
That's really good advice. Yeah.
That's very good because I get that question a lot. Where do I start implant dentistry? And it's really surgery, extraction start from there. Now, you said the public health communities, a lot of those are, I mean, they also do a lot of loan forgiveness too for students.
Yeah, some of that stuff. That's awesome too. And I think one of the most undervalued thing, like you touched on a second there with, you know, learning to be good at sutures or manage tissue. Mm-hmm. I mean, what an over or underrated thing when it comes to surgery. It's like, yeah, anybody can get teeth out, but can you do it in a way that, you know, protects the tissue and protects the socket and that sort of thing? I think that's good advice.
Typically in a clinical practice, what's going to drive the big push is going to be, what is the cost? What is the price? And you mentioned earlier some advice about being careful in your first few years of practice is don't get conned into spending too much money. So you can get started with quote unquote fancy dentistry. You can go ahead and you can have a fully integrated office. You can have all those things. You can go out and spend $120,000 plus on a CEREC system on your first day out in practice. You can get a loan for that, I can promise you. But what happens is, should you can still make a quadrant PVS impression for about $20 per impression. And then you can do a monolithic zirconia crown for about $40 nowadays in the state of California. What happens there is that if you stay lean and mean, you do quality dentistry. You don't necessarily just say, what's the fastest way that I can get this done? Because I'll be frank with you, I practice how I preach in school. I practice the same way in my clinical practice as I teach my students. I still use semi-adjustable articulators. I still use a face bow. I still use quality PVS impressions. I border mold. I do all those things that I teach my students. And I can tell you, I run an extremely good practice. And the most important thing that you can do for your patients in your practice as a young dentist is establish trust and rapport with people. Because if you don't have trust, if you don't have the confidence from your patients in you, you won't do dentistry. And part of that is a hard thing to teach. They can't teach that in dental school. And many times it's just saying, you know what? Like you, Payman, one of the first things that impressed the hell out of me about you is that you just have the confidence. I look at you and it's just like you're bubbling confidence. And that is a very difficult thing to train somebody. You have to know that, you know what? I can do this. If you just sit back and you wait for the world to change, you wait for your student loans to hurt you, you wait for a beautiful practice to come on your doorstep, you will be waiting forever. You have to have the confidence to walk into that fancy office and say, you know what? I'd love to be your associate. Could I learn from you? My first practice, I earned $50,000 in a year. Okay. It was a joke. I was making no money. But you know what? I learned a tremendous amount from that. Then all of a sudden I went, oh, shoot, I can't pay the bills. I better get another job. that's when I started to look and started to pick up someone.
But that's such a great point, because I think that's one of the worst things. One of the bad raps our generation gets, and rightly so, is a lot of times we want to sit there on the sidelines and wait for something to come be handed to us. And we can't do that. And mm-hmm. and they're not – the most dentists aren't seeking an associate necessarily, especially the good practices like that. So you have to be a little more – you know, they'll ask like, well, where do I find a job? I'm like, well, start going and asking reps, or find an office that you like, or you think that you want your practice to be like, and go talk to them. You know, you have to be willing to put yourself out there and go for it, because you can't just sit around and let it come to you.
You have to know that you look at an opportunity and everything is an opportunity. And I personally do feel bad for the millennial generation, the rap that it's given, because I can tell you, I know countless numbers of millennials that are intense hard workers that will never quit. And now maybe is that a regional thing? I don't know. I practice not far from the San Francisco Bay Area. And I got to tell you, these guys work 80, 90 plus hours a week. And it's nuts how hard they work.
I think we're polarizing, honestly. I think that's a big thing is I think it's both. You know, I feel the same way. I'm very confident in a lot of our friends and some of the people I know and in hearing that same thing, that there are a lot of us out there that we're going to take over the world. Like millennials are going to be running, you know, the major businesses, the major things in less than 10 years. I mean, we are going to be the ones that are doing that. And we're going to be the ones, like you said, pushing technology and dentistry, pushing the limit, trying to figure out what we can do. So now with that being said, I think there are some that, you know, it's like the 10% rule, that the 10% gets all the publicity. And so therefore we look like, you know, that we're not capable of that. But that's, I love hearing that from you because it's like, man, I get so sick and tired of hearing that. I'm like, look, watch out, because there's a lot of people that are hungry and they're not going to just sit back and wait.
Well, nothing in this world will ever be given to you. So meaning that there is a difference between confidence and hubris. Hubris is an overextension of confidence. And if you look up that word, I love that word because I am fearful of hubris every day of my life because nothing is ever taken for granted. You can go out and you can just be on a ski slope. You could be on your bicycle one day and all of a sudden take a major fall. And you could be indebted up to your eyeballs and know, oh, shoot, I just now ripped up my hand. I can't practice as a dentist anymore. However, you have to have the confidence to get on that bike. If you don't have the confidence, you'll never ride.
Yeah, that's awesome. What would you say is that some of the things you may have done differently when you graduated or things you know, you're like, man, that wish I had learned that a little sooner or kind of some, you know, give us some kind of little secret tips or whatever that, you know, you've kind of learned.
Great question.
That is a good question. Well, I got to tell you, I wish one of the first things that I did when I graduated is I wish I would have really listened to my mentors a lot more. And the sage advice from older people really is powerful. And sometimes we as a younger generation tend to look at it and say, what does that person know? They need to retire. But to tell you the truth, learning business skills from somebody who's been doing it for 40 years is not a bad thing to do. Understanding how to manage people from somebody who has had to live in the trenches for 20 years in managing a staff is a great thing to understand. And very few times in dental schools, even in the year 2017 and beyond, are we ever going to learn how to manage a business. It's just, it's not practical. You know, being on my side of the equation for several years and being full-time faculty, there is very few places in the curriculum where you can actually fit in business skills. And unfortunately, the flip side is, as many people say, dental schools, they're garbage because they can't teach business. You know what? A lot of students don't want to know business in dental school. And it's true. You're so focused on saying, I'm going to get the heck out of here because these guys have no idea what they're talking about. And I'm going to get out there and then really learn once I get out of dental school. That's hogwash. Hogwash. You can learn some amazing things in school, but you have to know the right questions. And I can tell you, all across this nation, whether it's in Memphis, in Florida, Ohio, California, Nevada, a lot of these faculty have run successful practices. We have several of our faculty members, either at UNLV or Loma Linda, that have had multi-million dollar practices. And now they're in a faculty position maybe because they're just tired. Maybe they can't practice anymore. It's a disability. Who knows? And pick their brains. Understand how they work. And now, yes, of course, if your primary MO is, say, I want to get really good at running a million-dollar plus practice, there's some people out there who think, I am gifted by nature. I think that I can go into my first day out of school and run a million-dollar plus practice. You're fooling yourself. You are fooling yourself. You need a good mentor. You need somebody that you can share the heartache with, meaning that it's like, oh gosh, I need somebody to call up and say, my assistant is calling in sick or she's asking me for more money. What do I do? You need that resource. And that's one thing I really wish that I asked more in my first few years of practice because I was so focused on saying, oh gosh, how do I need to get good at taking out these teeth or I need to go ahead and live a little bit. I've worked so hard this past 4 years in dental school. Let me just go do something. And now, granted, I'm a hypocrite too, because I went back to the Florida Keys and I just went scuba diving for another 2 years. Went fishing. But it's true. Those opportunities, and the thing that many people will tell you, if you really talk to the older people and the older generation, is that the number one thing they wish they could have back is time. Never squander time.
Man, that's killer advice.
This is hands down the best episode.
Yeah, Payman's loving this.
This is
okay. I mean, one more question I would ask you, and then Payman has more. But a big issue that I see and hear a lot of from is that you have a lot of dentists graduating who desire that mentorship, but we have a lot of senior dentists who, you know, in their mind, they're hiring an associate to cut back and make money off the associate, and they're not wanting to be mentoring someone. I think that's one of the big reasons that DSOs are growing so much, because they offer more CE, a guaranteed salary, a lot of the stuff that we're not getting. How do we try to transition that? Because I think ultimately what you're talking about and kind of where I've been, we're working with my dad is that exact thing. Like it's incredibly successful for me to realize I have 30 years of experience to bounce off every single day. Mm-hmm. At the same time, he's allowing me to bring in new ideas, new energy, get interested in the technology. And that's such a dynamic duo that I my goal is to like push more of that. And how do we do that?
That's a very difficult question to answer, because it's true. Not many of us have the opportunity where we can go work with a relative, because that one's big. That's a huge opportunity for people. However, I'll put it to you this way. You know, not too long ago, like Payman said, just at the beginning of this episode, he says, Mike, I met you and I feel like we've already just grown a kinship. You know, he says, I feel like I've talked to you and you've helped me out so much just in the few minutes of talking to you. Go out, go to dental meetings, go to dental societies, go on the internet. You can check out my website. You can go to michaelshearerdmd.com. You can hook up with me. Send me an email. I'll help you out. I am never too good or too special or too busy to simply answer an email. If somebody reaches out to me and says, hey, I need this advice, and it couldn't even be about implants. It could be something completely non-clinical. What do you think? Or to be frank with you, tune in to more podcasts, especially the Millennial Dental Podcast.
Yeah.
Because it's true. I mean, just to give you guys a plug. I mean, I love the podcast, and I'm sitting on the airplane, I'm driving in my car, and what a great way to learn from some of the masters out there. And go on the internet, go on Facebook groups, go out, reach out to people. I can tell you that the digital revolution of social media brings us all together. We no longer need this old-fashioned mentor-mentee relationship where we sit down every Thursday between 6 a.m. and 7 a.m. and pick somebody's brain about something. No, we've got 24/7 Facebook groups, LinkedIn, Instagram, social media sites of where we connect with people. And you can post a case and go, holy no, I did this. What do I do?
I yeah. And have feedback within 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Within seconds.
Yeah,
seconds.
You're right.
And you look and you post a question on there and be like, oh my gosh, I'm starting my first job. They want this. I'm not going to name any names, but this is what it is. You know, what do you guys think? And you get answers. And the internet is such a scary place too, because sometimes they're not filtered answers. And we sometimes want a filtered answer. But unfiltered answers are the key, because, I mean, this will just give me a little bit more age, but I mean, the internet's nothing new. We go on Facebook and we go on these groups and we think we're such a connected society these days because we've never been more connected in the world. And that's true. But I also still remember, just to sound like an old fuddy-duddy for a minute, I still remember the old days where I went online back in the late 80s, early 90s, and you'd go on the internet and these bulletin board channels, and it was the exact same thing. Everybody's ripping on each other. Everybody's goofing or posting pictures and all these stupid things. But you know what? It's connecting. And we as humans, especially in your podcast listeners, the millennial generation, want to connect with people. We have the human nature of wanting to connect. And connecting with a virtual mentor-mentee relationship is a wonderful way of doing that.
No, I agree.
Absolutely.
I agree.
I mean, that's one of my reasons for success. I feel like I have so many mentors ever since I graduated, and I look up to
100%,
them.
100%, yeah.
I follow this guy on YouTube channel every day. He's posting. Tell us a little bit about your YouTube, your activities on YouTube, because there are so much useful information that he's put up. Yeah, let us know a little bit about that. Where do people be able to look up all these channels?
Well, and this is a great segue too, because we started out talking about education and science and academics, and I'm an educator at heart. I love it. I wouldn't change it for the world. So when I stepped away from clinical and academic education, I said, well, how can I continue to start educating the world in dentistry? And I started some YouTube channels, and it started out with just Learn Locator, because I've always had a passion for overdentures. It's like, you know, I have this almost this disease, and the only prescription is more overdentures. And the reality is that I started a channel and people said, oh, that'll never catch on. Nobody cares about that. I've got one video that has almost 300,000 views on overdentures. And it's true. It's like everybody says, oh, that's such an easy procedure. But then they call me up or they email me and they say, oh, but how come this happens? And I say, well, maybe this, this, and this. And they go, oh, wow, that makes a lot of sense. Thanks, Mike. And it kind of has morphed. It turned into other types of overdentures and then the Learn Locator FTX channel. So you just go into YouTube and type in Learn Locator or Learn LODI, Learn Lodi, and check that out. Or you can just go to my website, michaelsheardmd.com/YouTube.
We'll post all that for sure.
Oh, thank you.
And, you also have the 3D dentist. Tell us a little bit about the 3D dentist too.
And I can tell you, as much as I love implant overdentures, the number one singular thing that has gotten me more excited for dentistry in the past 3 years is digital technology. So intraoral scanning and especially in-office affordable 3D printing.
Woo!
So, so approximately 3 years ago, and a lot of my patients too, they say, Mike, how come you do this? Or people will ask me, other older dentists, and they'll say, well, Mike, how'd you get into this? And I say, well, I'm just a computer nerd that just became a dentist. And it's true. My family were always
killer
like,
hands. I just am a computer nerd.
I forget. My hands are not even that good, to tell you the truth, Sully. I'm okay. Long story short, I was always the guy that never could draw something on a board. I could never paint. I could never do anything that was quote unquote artistic. But give me a handpiece. Give me a mouse. I can draw a Monet. And it's true. And it started out too when I was younger. And I probably shouldn't admit this on a podcast, but it was making fake IDs.
That's fantastic.
Oh my goodness.
Put yourself to dental school and you fake IDs. Uh-huh.
So anyways, I started to learn Photoshop and I learned all these things. And then 3D printing came out and intraoral scanning. When I went to practice, I said, yes, I can go out and buy these hundreds of thousands of dollars 3D printers and it'll work for my practice. But I thought that you could do it with a printer that was less than $5,000. And so 3 years ago, I went and I did a whole bunch of Kickstarter campaigns. One of them was Formlabs, and I've just been going nuts with 3D printing in my office now.
What all are you printing in your office? Because I'm on like I just need a little bit of advice and I'm going to order it tomorrow. I've been so close, but you know, other than I'm thinking models, surgical guides, that sort of thing. Tell me things that you like printing and you're printing in your office.
So the number one thing is you're going to laugh at this because I get a lot of heck over it. Is I 3D print.
We are seeing a rubber ducky on the screen right now.
And this is a shout out for a few of my friends, especially Jonathan on one of the Facebook forums, Jonathan Abenayam, because he gives me so much heck. Because I take a cone beam scan of a rubber ducky, and I can then generate an STL file of that rubber ducky and then 3D print it. And this rubber ducky is the mascot of Yosemite National Park. And my practice is only maybe an hour away from Yosemite National Park. And so I connect with my patients because I'll say, look at this. Isn't this awesome? And they'll be like, what am I looking at? You're looking at a dental scanner. I scanned this object, this rubber ducky, and I 3D printed an exact copy of it. And they're like, oh my God, you're like the smartest person in the whole world.
Yeah,
just think what they could do with my crown.
Yeah.
But in all seriousness, it kind of starts out with the basics. And you're looking at here just the old traditional intraoral scan model for a crown patient. I scanned a patient. It's sent to an industrial 3D printing factory, and it comes back a week later, and then my technician builds a crown on it. And I said, well, could I do that in my own practice? And the answer is clearly yes. I take the same intraoral scan, and I could use a low-cost 3D printer that can generate a model, dye model, crown and bridge dye model, of course, surgical guys, piece of cake, in a matter of an hour or so. But that's kind of where we are now. People will say, oh, all this digital technology is the future. No, it's the present. It's today.
We can
do this right now. And you can even do bizarre things like digital denture. That's coming. That is here. All we're waiting on is the materials. And the best part is for your listeners too, you know, learning how to place implants.
Oh my gosh.
Printing models. A model of somebody like this I'm showing here, a mandible. I'm printing out a patient's actual mandible for my practice that I practiced implant placements on before they come in.
For our listeners, right now, Mike is showing us all these badass models, 3D models. And we're going to – can we get snap an image of these that we could post these on the website?
How far do you think we are from being able to print – you obviously talking about dentures being close, but printing even like crowns?
Crowns is kind of one of the things that'll probably take the longest. What is proven today in this current era is models and surgical guides. Without a doubt, those two things are very predictable.
Which are huge uses.
Huge. And for me in my practice, I would say probably about 80% of what I print is a model. The vast majority of what I do is just to take away some of the things that are annoying in my practice. Like the old days of snapping an alginate impression, pouring it up in stone, and then my assistant, they get a bubble on the incisal edge or the tooth cracks off because she left it in the alginate overnight. It comes out fuzzy. All of those days are gone because
– yeah, you're getting a perfect one.
And you know, the magic too is that especially for your listeners that are very used to working with computers, I teach courses all over the country on 3D printing. And you know, we have –
that's my next thing I was going to ask. So go ahead.
We have an online course too. And I just came back this past weekend from one of our courses in the San Francisco Bay Area. I actually ran the first 3D printing course in the world for dentists, specifically on 3D printing. And we've been doing that for a better part of about 2-3 years or so now. And
now, is that the one that you taught at Hinman? Because I know that one was sold out. Is that the same one?
It was sold out. It is the similar course. I kind of modified it a little bit for Hinman so that way it could be a condensed version. But we have a completely online curriculum now. It's the website is learndental3d.com. Check it out. And you know, part of what I do with this stuff is taking your type of audience and saying, okay, you understand computers. All you need to do is to know the pathways of what has taken me 3 years to figure this stuff out with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's a challenge because I challenged myself and I said, I could be conventional. I can go out and get 3Shape software, ExoCAD, and do it all with dental software. But I said, I don't want to spend the $10,000 to $20,000 to buy that software. I download free open source software on the internet that's not meant for dentistry and use it to build dental models, to do wax ups, to do aesthetic cases, to do crown and bridge dyes, to do models.
When is the next course?
We offer courses. Check out my website, michaelshearerdmd.com. We have an online course. You can check it out 24/7. And for any listeners that are listening in, if I'm able to give a plug, would it be okay?
Oh, absolutely. Because that's what I was actually going to say. Like for somebody or a lot of people listening right now, if this is too much, what do they need to do to start? Basics, like for dummies, like 3D printing. Like, do you also have that, offer that to people who have no idea?
I do. So I think of it two ways. There's a group of dentists that say, I just need to know step 1 through 10, and then I'll know step 10 through 20 easily, no problem. And what I do on my online course, the learndental3d.com, is I take you from step 1 to step 100. And it's also meant for your assistants. You can just tell your assistants to go watch these videos. It's all 95% video-based education. And then there's also downloadable DICOM files, STL files of where to start. And a part of the plug, too, is the first 100 listeners that if you want to go ahead and mention the coupon code Millennial Dentist, I'll knock off $50 off the course.
Oh, so just nice. Type in
coupon code Millennial Dentist.
Well, I appreciate it. That's awesome.
But nonetheless, this is just one resource. If you send me an email, I'll coach you through the step. Also, nonstop. I'm happy to do it.
I mean, that's one of the things he's
doing. Yeah, be careful what you ask for, Michael.
Yes.
No, I'm serious. When I order the Form Lab tomorrow, it gets here Friday.
The Form Labs printer is really incredible. And for $3,500, you could accomplish what typically has been a $30,000 3D printer that you've had to use. And the companies know it. And they browbeat and they say, this Form Labs doesn't work or it's garbage. What a bunch of hogwash. I can tell you that the quality of these prints are on par, if not better, than some of the industrial 3D printers. So I have put some of the models that I've produced in my cheapo desktop level 3D printer, and they look better, and the crowns fit better than the high resolution quote unquote printers.
That's awesome.
Now 3,500, and that comes with the software as well.
So the software's free. All you got to do, if you want to go ahead and start downloading the software, principally the software that I teach is two of them, Blue Sky Bio Plan software or the Autodesk Mesh Mixer software. And you can go on there and you can just start playing around with 3D files. If you don't want to take the courses, if you want to just self-teach yourself, you can do that. However, it took me almost 3 years ago. There was no manual. Nobody out there was talking about Mesh Mixer. I personally think I brought Mesh Mixer to dentistry, but you can argue that with the other people out there. But nonetheless, I'm human. I know that it took me almost 3 to 4 months to figure out how to take an impression and to flip it over and put a base on it. It's a very difficult thing to do with a digital file, especially with something that's not meant for dentistry. But now it's really easy. And this past weekend, I took people that were millennials and also people that were in their 60s and 70s, first learning how to work with STL files, with digital files of teeth, and they could build a base. And part of my motivation in life, too, is that when somebody says you can't do something, I love to prove them wrong. So, and I know a lot of your listeners feel the same way because it's something that the millennial generation loves. You know what? We feed off of when somebody says the millennials are entitled. Let me prove you wrong right now.
You're exactly right.
You both are doing that. You run an incredible podcast. And I got to tell you, you see these people out there and you saw it like at the universities who say these students can't do these things. Mike, your head's in the clouds. You're asking them to do too much. What a bunch of garbage. You set the bar low, you will get low. If you set the bar too high, yes, you have to know the fine line. You find where it takes the level to get people to say, I want to do that. Like you both are sitting right here and go, oh, Mike, I want to do this 3D printing stuff.
Yeah.
You know what? Come on out. I'll teach you how to do this stuff.
I mean, honestly, I signed up for Dr. Kois. I'm going in September to start taking all his tracks because I need to get my occlusion on check. But other than that, I definitely need to, I'm gonna come out. And these are in California, those courses, correct?
Typically, it's in California just because it's hard to transport a lot of these materials. I run my practice and my courses very lean and mean. So I price things a lot lower than some of these other people out there that only look at this as a moneymaker. Tell you the truth, I do it just because it's fun for me. I love it. I love the interaction. And I love to be able to show the world that what they're taught is true, but they don't have to do it in the prescribed way that people say you have to do things.
It's the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, you talk to a sales rep from one of the distributor companies, mm-hmm. and you'll be like, oh, you need to spend this amount of money. You need to spend $200,000 to start 3D printing and intraoral scanning your practice. I can show you a way of doing it for $20,000 to $22,000. The exact same results.
Man, that's awesome.
it's not just about being cheap, guys. It's about being frugal, lean, and mean. And when you have $400,000 plus in student loan debt, and you know that you can do a computer application, all you need to be done is shown, yes, this is a way. There is a way.
Do you also learn in any of these courses? I'm just curious to know if you get any pointers from these students, like if they ask any questions or anything that you're like, oh, shoot, I want to do it. Like, I want to try this next time or something like that. I wonder how much you get that or if any.
So my friends who know me know that I'm not a huge Apple fan. I'm pretty much everything PC in my life, but I have tremendous respect for
Steve
Jobs.
I knew you had a flaw.
I have tremendous respect for Steve Jobs. When he said in the Stanford commencement speech, still I think about every day, stay hungry, stay foolish. Because when I go and I teach, I never sit back and say I know everything. No, far from it. Anybody who claims they're an expert and thinks that they know everything is fooling themselves. Every course that I teach, I learn something. Every time I interact with somebody from all different gamuts, every time I log online, I'm a constant and forever student. All of our dental friends that are listening to this must understand that. Never stop being a student. Payman, you just said just this year, last year, you took what, 950 hours of CPE?
I mean, ever since graduation, I've been, it's over 950 now.
But this is crazy, but you're a proverbial student.
But again, I just signed up for a course, so I'm going broke. No, I spend quite a bit of money. I graduated with $300,000 or $280,000, but now I'm almost $100,000 worth of CEs I've taken.
Well, and you know, and we got to wrap up here at some point. We could go all night, but I think you really we are very fortunate because we have had that spoken into us since we graduated.
Yeah.
And the, you know, the idea of continuing to learn. And so I love that you kind of hit that so hard, because that's the reality of how our generation can be really good and be better and push everyone else is doing that. So.
Absolutely. And it doesn't need to be expensive either. So yes, you could spend $100,000 in CE, but sometimes you can just go onto websites, YouTube. YouTube, there is so much free education out there. I've tapped into it. I know it. It's not expensive for us to generate education and content. And people come up to me and they say, Mike, I don't have all that fancy equipment that you have. You know what I do? Is I record my videos either using a camera that I bought at Walmart that I use Velcro tape to tape up on my overhead light. Or I see people posting iPhone video recordings of their techniques. Stay lean, stay hungry, do it effectively. Everybody has a camera. Everybody has a smartphone. Document your cases. Share it, either the good or the bad, with the world.
I love it. Absolutely. Michael, share everybody.
On a side note, this $100,000, honestly, most of it was paid with Affordable Dentures and Implants Corporate, where I used to work. So that was part of, you know how you said when you got out of school, you started working only first year, $50,000. When I started working at Affordable, well, I was doing full disclosure, but I was doing $10,000-$15,000 a day. So the way I looked at it was the experience I gained by working and the CEs that I gained also. So that I'm always respectful and to give back to Affordable Dentures Corporate, because I wouldn't be who I am, where I am right now without them, that corporate for sure.
Well, Doc, thank you so much for giving up your Sunday night. We really, really appreciate it. I know we've been trying to get to do this for a while, and this was...
I know. It's my fault.
I have thoroughly enjoyed this, so I look forward to getting to meet you in person sometime and doing this again, hopefully.
I'd love to have him again on... We got to get him at like 6 months, I would say, to see where is the digital, the 3D dental... What is the website again? The 3D dental...
It's learndental3d.com.
Well, that's awesome, man. Thank you so much.
I thank you for this time. And of course, I would love to be back. You guys are a lot of fun. And if it's meaning staying in touch, staying in contact, doing this again, up to date on the latest in technology, I got to tell you, it's funny because somebody will say, well, what are you going to be teaching or what are we going to be learning in the next 6 months? And I say, I have no idea.
It's changing.
It changes so much.
And it is.
It's exhilarating.
This reminds me of Dr. Picos when you go to his course, because you're going to sign up. You already signed up.
The one October.
He teaches the same thing. He said the same thing I always remember. He said, if you come into my courses, Ivanov, every 3 years, and I'm teaching the same thing, then this is, don't come to my, course. Yeah. So yeah, he's building. I mean, that's the thing, that everything changes. The hybrid dentist, he calls it. So.
Well, Doc, we always kind of end with this. We tell everybody, work smarter, not harder.
Not harder.
Thank you guys for having me. It's a pleasure.
Hey, thanks,
Thank
Doc.
You, Mike. Good night. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.